What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Corey, how are we doing on this Wednesday?
Doing good. Another midweek pod of the NBA Outlet. Excited to talk about what seems to be a ton of content already available for us since we recorded just 3 days ago. But here we are. The season rolls on. And let's chill with the injuries. Let's just relax a little bit.
Yeah, and sadly, that's what we're going to talk about a lot today. And before we get into it, though, quick reminder, head to otgbasketball.com, full of great NBA content for an array of different writers about an array of different teams, but also you can find the podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But, Corey, what injury do you want to get into first?
I think we should touch on the De'Aaron Fox one first, probably.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a pretty substantial one because I think most people would say De'Aaron Fox is probably their best player, if not their second best player. He's going to be out with a high ankle sprain. I think reports early on were a month, but then there's also other reports saying this is something that other players have dealt with and it lingers the entire year. A guy who's dependent on athleticism and speed, you think it's going to probably hamper his game even later on when he comes back. So what does this mean for Sacramento?
I mean, Sacramento's in big trouble to be where I had them, at least going into the year, which was a ninth seed in the West, but like seriously knocking on the door of a playoff spot. Already had a sluggish start. They've already, under Luke Walton, have struggled to remain a high-paced team. You know, last year, which was fun about the Kings, is they got out in transition. They created points off turnovers. They had Buddy Hield operating at a very high level from three. Some of the young guys started to pop. Fox obviously started to flourish. Losing Fox, he's like the engine that gets this team going, obviously, as the point guard, plays a really big role. Now you're looking at the backup point guard spot, and there's going to be a lot of Yogi Ferrell and Corey Joseph, which isn't ideal. Obviously, Yogi has had nice stretches in the NBA. Corey Joseph is a very solid vet, a vet who has winning pedigree to him. But it's definitely a downgrade losing De'Aaron Fox. It affects everything. It affects the pick and roll. It affects them in transition. They're going to be missing their arguably best player, as you mentioned. So I think for the Kings, I don't want to say their playoff hopes are done, but it feels like over these next, 4 to 8 weeks, maybe even longer, they're in some serious jeopardy of just falling too far out of the race.
Yeah, I mean, they could lose, a majority of these games. And like you said, they already weren't off to a great start. I think one guy I would probably look on to would be like Bogdanović to step up as a playmaker. He's pretty good in the pick and roll. He's a guy I think could get more minutes because you don't really want to give Yogi Ferrell a ton of minutes. Corey Joseph, you kind of know what you're getting, but he's not going to really create things. And like you said, Fox is kind of the engine for that team. Like, he's creating the offense. He's bringing that energy. He's pushing the pace. Without him, they're in some real trouble. And I think if this month goes bad or maybe the injury lingers, all of a sudden, Sacramento becomes one of the top teams that contenders are calling for trades because there are so many veterans and pieces on this team that I think could help contenders, especially if their season's going to be down the drain in a month.
Yeah. I mean, not to give King fans like false hope or whatever, they did have a win last night against the Portland Trailblazers.
Portland's another struggling team.
Right. But a nice win because, like you said, like Bogdanović in that game had 25, 3, and 10, played pretty much starting minutes. And was able to be the prime facilitator for this team. So if you're going to get a guy like Bogdanović stepping up in a role like that, then maybe you can at least stay neutral until De'Aaron Fox comes back. But like you mentioned, I think this is a team in a couple weeks that we're going to see a lot of these veterans on the roster start to see their names tossed up as possibly being traded.
Yeah, it definitely could be. And hey, who knows? The injury could help the Kings because we've hinted at a sluggish start for them. Sometimes having somebody go down forces other people to step up and play in other roles where maybe they're even more comfortable. So it could work out for the Kings. Obviously, we hope Fox gets back and healthy. But what's the next injury we want to touch on?
We should go to your home. The Brooklyn Nets, unfortunately, have a rough injury they're going to have to deal with. They made a signing already for Amon Shumpert. But who is the guy that they're going to be without, Nick? Who were you talking about?
We are talking about Caris LeVert, sadly. Obviously, most people know he suffered a horrific injury last year, this year. This is kind of just another bad luck injury in a way. I think he caught his hand on somebody in the Suns game in the second and third quarter. Right thumb injury. The Nets fear there's ligament damage, and it looks like he's going to be out several weeks, which I would assume is a month.
Yeah. So, obviously, the Nets have, an up-and-down start. The offense hasn't really been the problem, but defense has been the problem for the Nets. And Caris LeVert is probably one of the better all-around players on this Nets team. A very good scorer, a very good defender, and now you're losing that. And obviously, you're going to have to try and find defense and offense from a collective unit. I think Spencer Dinwiddie probably sees a boost in minutes, obviously. You're going to see more Iman Shumpert. Maybe you see Musa a little bit more. But it's definitely going to be an injury that's unfortunate because, as you mentioned, it being his shooting hand, you know, even if, you know, the next, you know, 4 or several weeks go well and he gets back, there's still going to be some lag between the time he's finally able to do basketball activities and when he's actually in game shape and ready because he's not going to be able to use his hand at all.
Yeah, that's the only thing that really sucks is the shooting and the dribbling. The only positive is it's not a lower body injury, so conditioning-wise, he should be able to stay in pretty good shape. But like you said, other guys are going to have to step up. Dinwiddie's been hot the last few games. He's going to see his minutes boost up. You know, Musa's a young guy that really showed up in training camp. David Nwaba's kind of that defensive mentality he can bring to the team. Garrett Temple's already been getting solid minutes. Maybe they give Shumpert some minutes. Obviously, like you mentioned, they just signed him, and they had the extra room on the roster because Wilson Chandler is suspended. So it's almost like a tryout for Shumpert, too. So last year, the Nets had a couple really bad games after LeVert got injured, and the next thing you know, they went on a winning streak, and they had the best, you know, stretch of the season. So maybe it could turn things around for the Nets.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, they were like, what, like 8-18? No.
8-18, yep.
Yeah, they were 8-18, right? And they turned it around. So, you know, definitely they've been in worse positions, and they have arguably way more talent this year than they did last year. But also, it will be interesting to see how, you know, like in particular, I know we drive the Kyrie point home, and some people, I think, as we both agree, would overreact to how he is as a leader. This is a pretty big moment, I think, for Kyrie when you lose a big player in Caris LeVert. How does he handle the adversity and what kind of role does he take with the team over these next couple of weeks?
Especially somebody who it seemed like Kyrie had confidence in, somebody he was willing to kind of give his offensive possessions to. And hey, you know, LeVert, you can run the show for this set, or hey, you can play the lead guard role and I'll play off ball. Like, they were developing a nice relationship. And the fact is they're going to miss the month is going to kind of throw everything off. But obviously it's early in the season and a lot of new pieces on this team.
Yeah, exactly.
And well, we got another injury. Like you said, like the injuries have been crazy. It's been ridiculous. It's been a lot of hand injuries and high ankle sprains. This one's a little bit different. Chris Middleton suffered a thigh injury. He's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. Does this have a big impact on the Bucks?
I think it does. I mean, we've kind of Cody Kluge wrote an article recently about should we be worried about the Milwaukee Bucks, and this was before the Chris Middleton injury, and he was already expressing some concerns for the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, their three-point shooting hasn't been as good. Their defense certainly hasn't been as good. Playmaking-wise, it's been a lot of Antetokounmpo. Eric Bledsoe has been solid. But, you know, compared to what, like, Malcolm Brogdon's giving the Pacers, you almost kind of wish you had Brogdon on the roster, especially the fact that you're losing Middleton now. I just think shooting-wise, they're going to struggle these next couple weeks without Middleton. Middleton, obviously, not as, you know, slight down year, I think, to start. But still like a, you know, high 30, low 40, three-point percentage shooter. It's a big blow. I mean, this is the second best player on this Milwaukee Bucks team, and they've already been a little bit sluggish out of the gate.
Yeah, they just haven't felt as dominant this year. They just haven't felt like that imposing team they were. And guys, it's a lot of the role players not playing great. Middleton hasn't been amazing, but still averaging 18, and like you mentioned, 39% from three, 46% from the field. And essentially just gives Giannis somebody else he can throw the ball to, and they can kind of go get themselves a bucket instead of depending on Giannis to create everything so much. I know Bledsoe's had a couple good games, but the other guys on the team, you know, Brook Lopez isn't really going to create. Wesley Matthews, George Hill, you know, Irsan Ilyasova. There's just a lot of guys in this team that need Giannis to do everything. And then even forcing Giannis to do more without Middleton being there, I think it's a little worrisome.
Yeah, no, it's concerning. And also, like, you don't, you know, obviously I don't think it's just like an issue, but like, you know, you don't want to like burn out Giannis Antetokounmpo so early in the season. I feel like there's like this slight chance that they have to like really like lean on him heavily. But again, I don't think that's a serious issue. He's a pro's pro. He's probably in the best conditioning shape compared to most guys in the league with how hard he works. But that would be something also I would look towards.
The only thing that's positive for the Bucks end is they don't really play him a ton of minutes. Giannis only averages 33 minutes a game. Some of that's due to a couple foul outs early on.
Yeah.
But maybe his minutes could be more in the mid-30s during the stretch without Middleton. And I think it could hamper their chances at, you know, home court, obviously still extremely early in the season. You know, what's going to happen in Philadelphia if they have an injury, or even, you know, Boston's been playing really well and Hayward just went down. But On to another one. I forgot about this one. Eric Gordon's out 4 to 6 weeks for the Rockets.
You know what's funny? I forgot about him too until I accidentally said Eric Gordon instead of Eric. I was like, oh shit, that's another guy that's hurt. Yeah, Eric Gordon, right?
It seems like nobody has talked about this one at all.
And this one's like, this one I think is major compared to like the other ones. Like at least like the Kings and Bucks, like, and even the Nets, they have like a lot of talent on the roster to like kind of pick up the slack if they do lose one guy. But like Eric Gordon is like the third most important player to the Houston Rockets offense. And the fact you're losing, I mean, obviously his numbers have been dog shit this year. So it's not like, but still, you need Eric Gordon to produce. This is why you re-signed Eric Gordon. And the fact of the matter is, he's going to miss time. He's had a knee injury. Mike D'Antonio, somebody dated it back to him having this issue last season, which then raises the question of, bro, why didn't you get this done in the offseason? Why didn't you take care of your knee to get into camp completely healthy? Obviously, maybe he didn't have the knee surgery because he was trying to make sure he got the biggest exception he could get from the Rockets. But again, like, I don't know why there wasn't like a health checkup that would have caught the knee injury if there was something with the knee injury. Regardless, he's missing time. Daniel House, I know, already isn't playing tonight, for example. And they have Ben Malcolmore starting for them. Ben Malcolmore hasn't started a game since April, like, 2nd of 2018. That's when he was playing for the Grizzlies.
And that was just probably like other people were injured, so he started.
Exactly. So Eric Gordon being out is a big loss for the Houston Rockets, who have already sort of been struggling. I mean, obviously they've been struggling defensively, high key, big key. You can tell the defense is not as good. But their offense hasn't been great. You know, it's obviously still very pampered around James Harden, a lot of James Harden isolation. Westbrook still does his thing. But the three-point shooting, you know, that's really where they lean on Eric Gordon. I mean, Eric Gordon still takes, I think, you know, 7 or more attempts a game. Losing him is going to hurt. And, you know, it's going to be questionable to see where they fall in the West or if they can maintain the West. As we know, losing Chris Paul last year, obviously James Harden was able to pretty much rally the troops and carry the team on himself. With his shooting woes to start this year, I don't know if that's going to be so easy.
The weird thing about the Rockets is it feels like they're off to such a bad start, but they're 7-3 and third in the West. So it like kind of throws you off because watching them and watching some of the games and even some of their wins, you feel like, okay, they're like kind of bad right now or their defense is terrible. But offensively, like you mentioned, they've been able to just outscore teams. And I think this year it's a little easier to deal with the Eric Gordon injury because they have a guy like Westbrook who can kind of give James Harden some time off or he can go to the bench and it's not just dependent on Eric Gordon to get buckets. Even when Chris Paul was there, there was times where he just had trouble scoring. So I think having Westbrook ease the load. And you brought up a great point. Like, this injury probably has been there since opening night because his numbers are really, really bad. We're talking 10 points a game, 30% from the field, and 28% from three. And, like, watching Eric Gordon his whole career, he's always at least been a solid player. These are just bad numbers. So I would think that's kind of hampered him. Maybe it can give somebody an opportunity to step up and give them another role player down the line. But it is a little concerning because it is one of your top four guys. And, you know, you could argue third or fourth depending on how you view Capella. Right. So it's interesting, but I think this year having Westbrook should ease the load a little bit. And the fact is that Gordon was playing so bad, I don't know if it'll hamper them quite as much as it would have in the past.
I think it hampers just because, like, you know, at least you know now that you're losing a guy who, when on, gives you 15 to 20 a night. But like you
and
said,
he can win you a game. He can win you. Like, right. We've seen Eric Gordon like just get really hot, score 30 points, and like miss four shots in the game.
I mean, realistically, best case scenario is they maintain this stretch. As you mentioned, they are 7-3. And then you get Eric Gordon back and healthy. And this isn't just like a drop off in ability and skill set. It's just him healthy again. And these numbers skyrocket.
And you get a good 3-point shooter because, like we mentioned, he hasn't been shooting well from three. If they get that to the offense with Westbrook doing a good job of attacking and him and James Harden continuing to build that relationship, maybe it could be a real positive for them. But still, 6 weeks is a long time for a guy to be out with a knee injury because we don't know how he's going to recover or if he's even going to be back to 100% this season.
Exactly.
So two other players. I think we could call all the injuries, right?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, and we touched literally on the last episode. We had a segment about injuries, so it's pretty sad. But two guys from the same draft class, who both were considered busts probably before this season, are off to really, really good starts this year. That's Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker. What are your thoughts on these two and the seasons that they're having?
I mean, Andrew Wiggins, first off, he's been the clear-cut second-best player on the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he's been the guy they go to in crunch time. When they need a big bucket, it seems like they go to Wiggins. He's been hitting the shots. He's obviously become a little bit more consistent. He's hitting three-point shots as well. I don't know. I haven't watched a ton defensively, like, or haven't focused on him defensively. I don't know how he is defensively, but offensively, he's just been consistent. And that's what they really have lacked from Andrew Wiggins, is the fact that Andrew Wiggins could give you like a 26-point night on like 43% shooting, but then the next night could give you like 11 on, you know, 30% shooting. But we're seeing consistency, which is obviously great to see for Andrew Wiggins, who's had some really big expectations going into the year, secured that big contract last season. And now with Minnesota Timberwolves being healthy and Towns leading the way and Wiggins being the clear-cut number two, they actually look like they're going to be threats in the West. Like, they look like they could be knocking on the door of a playoff team, of a playoff seed. And then Jabari Parker, I mean, this has been the guy I've stayed for a very long time. Especially between you and me, I think I've always leaned on the side of, I think Jabari Parker can be a good NBA player. We know the comments he's made about defense. We know how he views defense. But the fact of the matter is, I think a role off the bench is what suits him best. Obviously, with John Collins getting suspended for PEDs, or human growth hormone, whatever the exact terminology they use for a suspension, he's now playing bigger minutes, and he's just been good. He's averaging 17 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, only an assist and a half, but he's shooting 55% from the field. And he's only a career-high 49% shooter, so he's already playing above his career average. And he plays very good in their system of trying to push the pace. And the three-point shot, definitely not there at 26%. But the fact of the matter is, he gets out in transition. He looks like he's just hustling more, and that he just, like, he realizes that his opportunities in the NBA were coming to an end, or they were dwindling. And I think he's really made the most so far through, you know, 10 games with the Atlanta Hawks.
And I think the fit next to Trae Young has been really good. You mentioned, you know, getting out, pushing the pace. That's where Jabari Parker's the best. And then also, it feels like probably 50% of his points have been dunks, and that's a lot of Trae Young just finding him under the rim. It's a really good situation for him. And like you mentioned with Wiggins, he's been hitting clutch buckets since opening night. He just looks like a different guy. Decision-making has improved, and his overall impact on the game has improved. Even his assist numbers are up, you know, over 3 assists a game. Rebounds are still around the same. I think the defense has been moderately better. There's still plenty of room for improvement on that end, but still, both these guys have really impressed. Which guy do you think is most likely to keep it up the entire year? Maybe not these exact numbers, but be a good NBA player the rest of the season.
And I was way off on Jabari Parker's numbers. He's averaged, oh no, that was per, never mind, that's per 36. I was about to say, this man's averaging 24 per game. I was like, what the hell? So who do I think maintains it? I'm going to say, because I kind of just hope it's true, I hope Andrew Wiggins. You know, I think this is a great start to a season that can only build his confidence. The fact that the Timberwolves are playing solid basketball, the fact that Towns is a stud. Obviously, he missed a couple games with his suspension, but he's back. So I think I would lean more so towards Andrew Wiggins maintaining this level of play, because, you know, the Jimmy Butler saga is now behind them. I think they have their roles more solidified. I think, because also, like, you know, remember, losing Zach LaVine was weird, because I kind of felt like Wiggins and LaVine were both trying to be the number two. And then with Butler, you know, Wiggins kind of lost. I think, I feel like Wiggins the last 3 years really hasn't known what guy he's supposed to be. Like, he knows what the expectations are, but not necessarily how to be that guy. I think he finally understands who he is and how to be an effective player on this Minnesota Timberwolves team.
And obviously the coaching change, adjusting to a new coach, I think Ryan Sanders has helped kind of unlock him a bit. I'd go to Wiggins too. Also, just for the fact he's going to have a bigger opportunity. When John Collins is back, Jabari Parker's numbers are going to kind of drop. Teams are going to adapt a little bit more. When I think Andrew Wiggins is probably the more talented player with what he can do on the court. It's just about decision-making and the confidence. And early on, they both look better. And Jabari Parker is going to be able to kind of get pushed to the bench. And, you know, there's going to be nights where he might not even get 10 shots.
Right. No, that's a good point as well. The role boost for Parker has definitely benefited him the last 5 games or so since he got moved into the starting lineup.
And, I mean, eventually I think teams will realize, like, hey, Jabari can lay it in and dunk. Like, we're just going to try to force him out. Yeah, like, you got to shoot a couple shots. If you do that, you'll be good to go. But also, we mentioned, we were talking before the show, Orlando is already looking to get into some trade action. They've had some interest in DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Orlando, I had them as a borderline playoff team. I think I had them as a playoff team as of the 7th or 8th seed. You know, they made the playoffs last year, had only one offseason acquisition in signing Alofrico Aminu.
I mean, he was trying to get freaky, huh?
And they've kind of stumbled, right? You know, Aaron Gordon's having a really rough start to his season, not shooting the ball overly well, especially from three. His three-point shot has disappeared, shooting just 27%, which I obviously getting a guy like DeMar DeRozan doesn't necessarily help. Your point guard play, I think Fultz has been solid, but Fultz clearly isn't like somebody you can rely on for a lot of offense. Fournier, I think, has taken a step back just in like the production quality. I think his numbers are solid efficiency wise, but it seems like he gets enough touches or is a consistent element in their offense. Getting a guy like DeRozan just assures you someone who can give you, you know, 24 to 27 points per night. And that's been the issue for the Orlando Magic, is they have a really good defensive squad. They play defense and they're able to kind of like grind out games and remain close. They just don't have a lot of offensive pop. A guy like DeMar DeRozan can really change the complexion of this offense, and their defense is good enough that even though DeMar DeRozan is only like a subpar defender, he probably doesn't get burned as much playing in Orlando.
Yeah, currently they're fourth in defensive rating, 29th in offensive rating. So obviously there's a major issue there. And even if you know, push DeRozan into the lineup they have, and they're not giving up, you know, Jonathan Isaac probably, so they'll still be good having a defensive presence like that. And then maybe you send Gordon to San Antonio or something like that, who, like you mentioned, is having a really rough season. Another interesting thing for Orlando, nobody on the Magic is averaging more than 17 points per game. Nikola Vucevic is averaging 17.1, but after that, it's Gordon at 13, Isaac at 12, Fournier at 15. So it's like they don't really have that go-to score. And DeRozan, it's not the same player he probably once was, but he can still give you a consistent 20 every single night. And I think for a team like this, getting that offensive punch would be big. The only thing I'd worry about is, you know, his contract is coming up. Then you're going to have to pay him. And I think we've discussed in the past, I'm not sure if DeMar is going to really age super well in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern. A guy who really relies on his athleticism and his speed to get his offense going. When he loses that, it's kind of the same issue I have with Westbrook in a couple of years. Guys who don't have great jump shots, you know, how do they change their game? I think DeMar DeRozan has a good enough footwork to kind of be a subpar post player. But again, with his size and position he played, that's not an ideal scenario later in his career. But I want to just touch on the fact that, like, Nikola Vucevic has probably been a big part of why this offense is struggling, because his percentages, his shooting numbers are way down. Like, last year shot 51% from the field, shooting just 43% this year. From three, shooting 24% this year. He was shooting 36% last year. It just feels like teams kind of have a game plan on Nikola Vucevic, and they kind of realize that if you kind of limit Vucevic and if you give him a headache early, you want other guys in this team to beat you. And generally so, like, you can't – there's no one on this team that's, like, ready to beat you yet.
Yeah, that the spacing just really isn't there. So you're not going to get punished as much for, you know, making Vucevic's life more difficult. Fournier shooting 40%, Isaac is shooting 37%. But after that, nobody else on the team is shooting over 32%.
Right.
Like, you're just not – yeah, you're not going to have spacing, especially when a center is trying to operate in the post. And so many great athletes in the NBA, it's not going to be that hard to recover. So I think Orlando knows they have an issue offensively. They're looking to address it. I'm not sure if DeMar is going to solve that problem, but I do respect the fact they're trying to be proactive and make sure they have a playoff season, because they almost need to. When they went in last offseason and kind of re-signed their guys, they kind of sent a message like, hey, we're happy with this core. We want to keep building what we have, where if they don't make the playoffs, then that kind of looks like a bad move.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to Terrence Ross, too. I mean, you got the big money, and he has been really bad off the bench. I mean, you know.
I don't even want to say his numbers out loud.
Yeah, he's shooting like under 20% from three, right? Or is he finally over 20?
He is at 8 points a game, 32% from the field, and 22% from three. The only positive is his free throws are
in. Keep in mind, this is a guy who had 217 three-pointers made off the bench last year, which led the entire NBA.
I think we had a discussion, who would you rather have, Terrence Ross or Jeremy Lamb, like way in the beginning of the offseason doing a preview, and we both went with Lamb, and we were like, you know, Ross is just a guy that is just so inconsistent from season to season. One season he's amazing, and then the next season it looks like he shouldn't even be in the rotation.
Yeah, and this is a guy, too, in Ross, that, like, I was really high on last year. Like, I was hoping the Pacers, I think I even mentioned at one point, I hope they traded for him just to get some offensive pop off the bench. Looking back, I'm kind of glad they didn't, because the fear of giving Terrence Ross big money now is dreadful.
Yeah, I mean, Orlando could be in real trouble with those contracts. Maybe they can get something moved. On Orlando's side, who do you think is the most likely to get moved other than Aaron Gordon?
I'd probably say Evan Fournier.
Yeah.
because his numbers are also good still. You know, he's averaging 46% from the field, 40% from three. I feel like he's a plug-in guy anywhere you go. You need shooting in the NBA. He can provide that. I think he makes like 15 or 16 million a
17
year.
A year with a player option for next year.
Okay, and that's still, you know, in today's NBA, that's not bad. It's not bad for a guy who gives you 16 points per game on efficient scoring. You put him in a better system. Maybe you put him like a San Antonio system. He probably plays a little bit better. So I think Fournier would be my next up guy to move.
Yeah, I think Fournier would be a good option. I could see them also possibly moving a guy like Aminu, even though they just signed him. He just seems like a plug-and-play guy around the league. Even possibly DJ Augustin, expiring contract, $7 million. Somebody's looking for a backup point guard. That could be a guy they go after.
Definitely.
But, Corey, I'm going to pass it over to you for the next segment.
Okay, so we are back to Believe It or Not. This is a fun little segment we're going to start doing. I'm on Twitter by screen time. I have like 10 hours a day. I'm like,
okay, you make me feel a lot better about myself. I was embarrassed to even tell my fiance how much I had. So
what do you have?
I was at one day, and this was a day I forgot to turn off, like, you know how you set your phone so it goes to sleep mode? Jack and I were doing a Periscope, so I have to put my phone on non-sleep so I don't randomly disconnect. But I was at 7 hours.
Oh, wow. So you still make me feel bad.
Yeah, I have to be on my phone for work, too. So
yeah, and like NBA Twitter nights, I'm averaging like 11 hours. On like nights I'm on Twitter, which is like, it's different because like I'm on Twitter, but even still 10 hours, a lot of screen time. So I'm on my phone a lot. So I'm on Twitter viewing tweets and people post stats, people post numbers that I'm not aware of. So I'm going to, you know, screenshot them and then we're going to bring them up in this segment, Believe It or Not. So first up, Kristaps Porzingis. Now note, all of these will be within a 48 hour radius. So this tweet is from yesterday. So again, if the Mavericks play, the numbers may be slightly different or you know, et cetera. Kristaps Porzingis is the only player in the NBA this season attempting more than 15 field goals per game, yet is shooting 40% or worse from the floor and below 70% from the free throw line. Believe it or not.
I don't think it's going to keep up. I don't believe it. I think Kristaps is a really good player. He's just in a funk right now, especially the free throw percentage being so low. I think he's always been like a solid free throw shooter, nothing too crazy. And 40% for him is too low. I think he'll get to at least the low 40s.
Yeah, and also just another number to add on to that. The Mavericks with Porzingis on the court have a 101.2 points per 100 possessions. With him off the floor, they have a 125.7 points per 100 possessions. So this is just early season jitters.
Yeah, I think just rust. You know, he looked good in the first couple games. Then after that, he just lost his confidence. He's not being quite aggressive. I watched him in the Boston and Dallas game, and there was moments where it's just like the Mavs were better with him not on the floor. And I think you mentioned the on-off numbers. I think they're even worse when, like, it's included with Luka. Luka's been playing better without him because it seems like Luka's trying to get him involved. But Porzingis just isn't, I think, in the right confident state right now.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a tweet about Porzingis, and I thought it was hilarious. It was like, Porzingis has the body and everything you want for an NBA All-Star, but has no touch. I kind of feel that way so far. But I also think it's just because he hasn't played on an NBA court in over a year and a half. So you're not just, like, as fluent, I feel like. But I thought that was funny.
Pretty much. I mean, like, when you don't play basketball for a while, like, even if you go to the court and shoot around, you're going to make plenty of shots. But then, like, if you play a game and there's actually somebody, like, physically trying to defend you, it's just going to throw you off because they're going to actually, like, try to move you off your spot or try to block the shot.
Yeah, you're probably not as confident in, like, making certain moves if you haven't had someone guarding you for certain moves.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because, like, the guys you're training against are, like, his brothers and they're, like, under 6'5", so.
Yeah. Next up, the top scoring duos. First, Harden and Westbrook at 59.2. Lillard and McCollum at 52.8. LeBron James and Anthony Davis at 51.2. And the fourth highest duo in the NBA? Can you guess it? Yes, you're right. It's Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Believe it or not.
Honestly, man, I almost kind of believe it in a sense because Kat is going to have to put up shots and then Wiggins is going to have to put up shots because, like, who else is really scoring a lot on that team? But part of me is like, do I want to put that much confidence in Wiggins? I just said that he'll be better than DeVar.
And we got a 10-game sample size. How much are we going all in on Wiggins?
I'm going to say no, I'm not. I'm not believing it. I think it's going to drop down. I think maybe they'll be in the top 10, but not top 4.
I think that's fair. All right, where am I next? Okay. Donovan Mitchell in among the NBA in clutch time minutes, is first in free throws, third in points, third in assists, and fourth in steals. The Jazz are 5-2 in these games. Will Donovan Mitchell, or are these numbers sustainable, believe it or not? I didn't word that right, but even still, believe it or not.
Ah, man, I watched Donovan Mitchell last night, and he is good. He has an ability to hit a lot of shots that are really well defended in the paint. He just has like this little like quick floater shot that I think people can't react to in time. And I think the Jazz will be in a lot of close games. Actually, I don't even know if the Jazz will be in that many close games as they kind of progress through the season, because I think Mike Conley is going to be a lot better. Ah, this is tough. I'm going to believe it. I'm going to buy some Donovan Mitchell stock today.
Yeah, I think we've seen enough early on. And as you mentioned, the Mike Conley struggles were just like so outlandish. Like they were just such an outlier for how bad he was shooting those first couple of games. That there's just no way that he's going to be this bad all season. And I think Bogdanovich missing some time, him being back, you can already, like, Mitchell's already spoken to it, the fact that he just feels looser out there knowing he has an offensive weapon in Bogdanovich, which is also just, like, awesome to hear. Because, like, Bogdanovich has had a kind of crazy career in the NBA where he was kind of just, like, this guy on a really bad Nets team, was a six-man, was, like, an off-the-bench guy, Washington kind of struggled, and then all of a sudden the Pacers becomes an elite scorer and a decent defender, and now has just flourished again with the Utah Jazz early on.
They just have so much more spacing and so many more options, and even, like, Conley can hit Mitchell if he's not running the action. And then you have Bogdanovich giving you spacing. And then obviously Gobert provides that vertical spacing inside. So, like, things look really well for Utah. Their offense is still not clicking, but there's a lot of potential for them to step up to another tier.
All right. Next up, Tobias Harris, catch and shoot three-point shooting efficiency. He is shooting 30% this season on catch and shoot threes. This is his lowest percentage since his rookie season. Last year, he shot 38%. 2017, he shot 40%. 2016, he shot 35%. 30%, believe it or not.
I don't believe it. I think, like, he'll be better. He's a better shooter than that. And the fact is, he's going to get a lot of open threes. The only way I could see it staying like that, if teams are just really like, hey, we know they only really have one three-point shooter in their starting lineup, we're making sure he doesn't get a good look. But catch and shoots are usually something you shoot a higher percentage on.
Right. Definitely been, I know a Philly Twitter, 76ers Twitter is growing a little bit antsy. For the fact, I think he went like, what, 0-11 last night or 1-11 the night before.
He wasn't really great for them last year either, including the playoffs.
Right. So I think there is some concern. Obviously, we weren't so high on him getting max money. You know, that was one guy we kind of felt like there was other players who probably you would have liked to have seen that money go to. So that would be the one concern with that. Next up and last up, this is the top five isolation defenders this season. 1, Bam Adebayo. 2, Taurean Prince. 3, Danilo Gallinari. 4, Kai Bowman. 5, Royce O'Neal, believe it or not.
I believe like 3 of those guys maybe, and then the rest I don't believe. Like Gallinari's not going to be a top isolation defender for the rest of the season.
So which and also I'll give you the field goal percentage that teams are averaging against them. It's pretty ridiculous. So against Bam, guys are shooting 7% from the field.
I honestly would not be surprised if Bam is number one. His defense to start the season has been amazing, and he plays on a good team defense in Miami.
Yeah, and he is number one. Number two, Taurean Prince. Defenders shoot just 14% against him in isolation.
That's he's been good for the Nets, but that's even a surprise. And the fact is the Nets defense is so bad and he's still doing that is impressive. I don't know if he'll stay top two, but he could definitely stay in the top 10 if he's going to keep up that kind of ability.
Right. And then Gallinari is averaging, defenders are shooting 27% against Gallinari. And then both Bowman and O'Neal guys are shooting 25% against them.
O'Neal, I could see staying up there. I really like him as a one-on-one defender.
I'm not going to lie to you. Who the fuck is Kai Bowman?
I mean, I know of him. I don't think that he's I don't know much about his game. So I'm sure it's probably just one of those stats where, like, he's logged a couple minutes and it just happened to be really good minutes and then his stats are really skewed.
Yeah.
Royce O'Neal, I think, is a really nice defender because he has some good athleticism, but then he also has the size and the body to kind of deal with a physical presence.
Yeah, I mean, the Kai Bowman stuff is, I want to say, that's just a dick. It is sort of impressive because the Warriors have been so bad defensively, and the fact that they have someone on that team that's got a high or is doing so well in isolation defense, I think does say something because that team is just a dumpster fire defensively. But yeah, and that's all I got for Believe It or Not.
And I'm just wanted to check. Kai Bowman is averaging 18 minutes a game. He started three games, so he doesn't really have a big sample size compared to the other guys who are all regular rotation guys that are playing good minutes. So,
That would make sense.
but as always, Corey, a pleasure talking hoops with you. Big thanks to everybody for checking out the outlet. And you can find us on iTunes, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, make sure you head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass, grab some OTG merch with discount code OTG5.
Peace out, knuckleheads.